You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
During yesterday's session, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi gaveled this year's platform for the Democratic Party, but very little attention has been paid as to what's in the platform or how it got there. And joining me now to shed some light on it is John Nichols, D.C. correspondent for The Nation. He's reporting on the convention for thenation.com, and I'm pleased to welcome him to our show. Hi.
Hey, Leonard. It's wonderful to be on with you.
Can you describe the platform meetings that the Democratic National Committee held this year?
Well, let me ask you up front, do you want me to be honest with you, or would you like me to give you, you know, a nice, pretty picture?
No, tell me the truth. I could take it, John.
Okay, you're a strong man. Look, they were essentially productions, much like the convention, more for public consumption than real, you know, down and dirty, intense debates about what this party should stand for. And they were especially, they were kind of more managed and manipulated this year than even in the past, because they set up this remarkable thing where they said people around the United States can gather in their living rooms and contribute to the platform writing process, which folks did. They also got an invitation to contribute money to the campaign. But as they were doing that, the draft platform had already been written. And so it's a kind of a painful reality that the platform is very much a reflection of the candidate and his campaign, and not what it once was historically, which is a product of a party coming together and really, you know, sort of sorting issues out.
But since it was unclear who the nominee would be until fairly late in the primary process, how much can the platform reflect the goals of Barack Obama?
Well, it's an interesting thing. This year in the platform committee, they put three different co-chairs in charge, one an Obama supporter, one a Clinton supporter, and one a supporter of John Edwards, because at that point he was still in the game. We now, of course, are well aware that he's very much out of the game. But those
Well, into
three
another
people,
game anyway.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah, it's amazing how little he's mentioned at this convention. But these three people were there, and frankly, it was a consciousness on the part of the Democratic National Committee that one of them would take precedence and essentially be the dominant player. Obama did move to, you know, the leading position, and when that happened, Deval Patrick, the governor of Massachusetts, a very strong early Obama supporter, really became central to the committee, and they appointed an Obama aide, an ally of Obama, to set up a drafting committee. That draft really came out of the Obama camp and then was sort of walked into the formal process. There's about 180 people on the platform committee, but they had a 15-member drafting committee that actually, you know, kind of went over things. There were a couple of places where they did take pressure from the outside, and mainly it was a case where some members of Congress decided to intervene and demand a little more than what the platform was doing.
So that
most of it was from Obama.
So that grassroots approach that was so prominent and probably quite expensive was really a sham.
Yes, absolutely. It was, and let me be blunt with you, the Republicans have similar shams. The tragedy of this is that 20 years ago, not that long ago, both the Democratic and the Republican Party still had open platform writing processes, which were seen as unique entities unto themselves and were important to figure out what parties stood for.
And there were debates, and there were arguments.
Oh, there were wonderful debates. Yeah. I was with Jim Zogby the other night at an event. Jim Zogby is the head of the Arab American Institute. But in 1988, he was an aide to Jesse Jackson's presidential campaign. And Zogby was recalling the fight on the floor of the 88 convention over recognition of Palestine. And now you say, well, maybe that didn't help the Democrats too much, and maybe that seems arcane to some folks, but understand that that was a point at which the Israel-Palestine issue became very front and center in American politics. It was a healthy thing. Similarly, there have been debates in earlier times on the stance of the Democratic Party as regards apartheid, as regards the war in Vietnam, as regards civil rights. Remember that Hubert Humphrey became a leading national figure as a result of a speech at a 1948 Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia, where he spoke for the minority report on a platform plank on civil rights. The platform plank that had been written was very vague, did not make strong commitments. The minority plank, much more passionate, much more intense. Humphrey came to the podium and he said, there are people who say that we're pushing too far, we're going too early. I say we're 170 years too late. It is time for the Democratic Party to step out of the shadow of states' rights and into the sunshine of human rights. The convention heard that message, went with that message, led by delegates from New York and Wisconsin and Minnesota and Massachusetts, voted for this strong civil rights plank. The Southerners walked out following Strom Thurmond, and African-American voters who had been Republicans largely up to that point began a transition into the Democratic Party, which became more and more the party of civil rights. So there you see what a platform fight does, because, of course, this is a convention that will nominate an African-American man for president, and you can see roots of the nomination in those past platform battles as much as in particular campaigns of individual candidates.
So you might expect to see more than these varying degrees of commitments on these issues. You have statements like, we will, we should, we support. It gets quite vague at times.
Oh, it surely does. I find some areas are pretty precise and pretty strong. Representative Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin, who was the first openly lesbian or gay person elected to Congress as such. We have a number of lesbians and gays in Congress now who came out after their election. Tammy Baldwin's always been out. She was on the core drafting committee, and she made sure, and I think quite effectively, that the platform has some of the strongest language, though let's be blunt, it has the strongest language in history on gay and lesbian rights. And it's not everything that some people wanted, but it's pretty powerful there. It's also, frankly, on a lot of labor issues, labor rights, it's pretty strong. But here's the interesting thing. On the core issue that the average working family in Ohio or Michigan or Indiana or Pennsylvania and upstate New York knows as, you know, a central kind of workplace issue, that being trade policy, NAFTA, trade with China, things of that nature, the platform goes, to my opinion, very vague. It does not have nearly the bluntness that even candidate Obama had back when he was fighting primaries in some of those states. And so it is.
And the abortion plank has been changed. The revised one says this: the Democratic Party also strongly supports a woman's decision to have a child by ensuring access and availability of programs for pre- and postnatal health care, parenting skills, income support, and caring adoption programs. Nowhere does it mention the word abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Are Democrats now trying to reach out to evangelicals and independents with that?
Do you think, Leonard? Yes.
But, well, if absolutely. They did that, then why have they? Why were they so willing to mention same-sex marriage, although they did leave out the words gay and lesbian?
Yeah, isn't it interesting? And Tammy Baldwin, who was involved in the process, noted that they have always left out the words gay and lesbian. It has tended to be out of the platforms in the past as well. This is the weaving of a very delicate fabric here. You put together a lot of different things. It's not always easy to do. And on the abortion issue, I think that it's safe to say that Democrats are quite aware that just about everybody in the country sees the Democratic Party as a pro-choice, pro-abortion rights party. And so, yes, they were using the platform process there and the platform itself as a vehicle to do major outreach to younger evangelicals. And this is an interesting transition that's going on. Jim Wallace, the writer and activist with Sojourners, which is a religious grouping, has been very, very involved in the platform process of both parties. He will speak at the convention here in Denver and at the Republican convention in St. Paul. And one of the things he's been trying to do is soften the language of both parties on this third rail issue, if you will, so that they can begin to talk about other issues as well. And I think that what the Democrats are trying to do here is to move the discussion onto child care for all, a lot of the sort of family-friendly issues, child-friendly issues, poverty issues. One thing that both parties are very just beginning to realize is that young evangelicals are very, very engaged with the fight against poverty. And John Edwards, for all of his flaws, actually did understand that and did some very, very strong outreach there. I think the platform is a reflection of that dawning consciousness. And frankly, I actually find, you know, again, I don't like vague platforms. I don't like when they write around things. But I would suggest that in that zone, trying to do that outreach, is a healthy thing, because when we just divide our country into an argument on one side of the abortion rights issue versus the other, we shut down a lot of other dialogue.
Well, bipartisanship is mentioned throughout the document. Isn't that surprising in what is, by definition, a partisan platform? Is this also another attempt to attract independent voters, saying the Democratic Party is a big tent?
That's exactly it, Leonard. You know, this is, instead of being the platform of a political party, this is really a statement from a campaign. This is an argument, you should vote for Barack Obama for president. That's what the platform is effectively saying. And, you know, that's fine. Parties do that. But in the old days, and not very long ago, even 15 or 20 years ago, a platform said, you should vote for Democrats because of this, that this party has made a commitment. And again, we say, well, who reads platforms anyway, and who cares about platforms? And yet, as I outlined a couple minutes ago, that struggle over the civil rights plank, that was monumental. And as this party evolved its language on civil rights, that's where you began to open the door for the politics that we see this year. Remember, this is a great platform story from 100 years ago. Democrats met in Denver. The African-American community of Denver petitioned William Jennings Bryan and the party leadership to include a plank condemning lynching. Not even a civil rights plank, just denouncing lynching. The Democratic leadership refused to put that plank in the platform, and the African-American community, not just in Denver but nationally, took the message that Democrats didn't want them for the better part of 20 more years.
Well, of course, so, Republicans were also the party of Abraham Lincoln, and that also had a major impact on African-American attitudes. I'm talking to
you're
John.
Right, but remember 1908. Remember that 1908 was a time when we were getting far enough away from the Civil War era that the Democrats should have been starting to make an outreach to African-Americans, and they refused to do so.
My guest is John Nichols. I'm talking to him from the Democratic National Convention. He's the Washington, D.C. correspondent for The Nation, and later we'll talk a bit about some of the other things that he's doing there at the convention, actually talking to people and moderating forums as well. But you mentioned that John Edwards did get part of his campaign into the platform, the sections on poverty, and Hillary Clinton seemed to have gotten an awful lot of her health care concerns here. That's her signature issue. Are her ideas reflected in that part of the campaign, the platform?
To some extent, they are. In fact, I think this is one of the healthiest things about the platform process. When the committee has people from different campaigns, sometimes even if they are not advancing the agenda of their candidate, they are at least pushing to open things up and bring new language in. There's a national group called Progressive Democrats of America that worked with Congressman John Conyers, who's a big supporter of single-payer health care. That's something that neither Clinton or Obama support. It's a universal plan paid for by the government, much like in Canada or most European countries. And Progressive Democrats of America and Conyers came to the platform session in Pittsburgh knowing that they were not going to get an endorsement of single payer, but seeking to rewrite a section of the document so that it included the language guaranteed health care for all, and also a developing a plan with the language, again, a quote here, everyone in, nobody out, i.e., again, emphasizing that universality. They got that language because Clinton delegates picked it up and really pushed it in the platform process. And frankly, I think that the Democratic platform is a stronger document because the Clinton people, as well as some of these other outside groupings, Congressman Conyers included, forced the party to be more precise and say something that I think is actually more meaningful. The worst thing in the world is a platform that isn't worthy of reading because it is so vague, so gray. I think it's these battles and some of these internal struggles that begin to give us some real color and some real character in the platform.
Well, how much of it is also just throwing a bone to Hillary Clinton's supporters? There's a section on opportunity for women, and it includes a line from her concession speech, "Our party is proud that we have put 18 million cracks in the highest glass ceiling."
Yes, there's quite a bit of that sort of language throughout the platform. Again, this is the use of a platform for something other than stating positions on issues. Really, it is the use of a platform to try and build party unity. to be blunt with you, I think they've still got a little work to do. But I'm hearing a lot of chatter at this convention from Clinton folks who are still dissatisfied. But that is something that the Obama people can point to and say, yeah, I mean, there was clearly an impact here. We've also seen some impact of the Clinton folks in the Rules Committee process. There's so much, Leonard, at a convention that goes on behind the scenes, sessions of committees and groupings never really covered by television media, that is in many ways more important in the long term, because it's in those behind the scenes meetings, Rules Committee, Platform Committee, Credentials Committee, where you begin to outline how different campaigns, the Clinton campaign, the Obama campaign, and different sections of the party begin to work with one another.
Well, there are some lines that seem to have been taken from Barack Obama's speeches, but it's interesting that adjustments have been made to things he has said during the campaign. For instance, in the section on Iraq, the platform states that they expect to get troops out of Iraq in 16 months. Is it unusual to have such a long section on foreign policy in a party platform?
It's not unusual. It's not unusual at all. Party platforms are, interestingly enough, the domestic economic section is often ceded to the organized labor community, as well as issue groupings and interest groupings in particular areas. The foreign policy section tends to be the place where the old hands of the party, the former secretaries of state, the former national security advisors, show up, a Sandy Berger, for instance, at a platform writing session. And they take that very seriously because the people who are players on the international scene know that the governments of other countries really do read these platforms. They're very, very interested in where a party stands and what a party is willing to put on paper. In Britain or in any other European country, you run on a so-called manifesto that's at for each campaign. It's the same as a platform. They take their manifestos very seriously, and they take our platform seriously. And so there's a real the biggest struggles usually are, you know, word for word, line for line, on the foreign policy section. As a result, that section is often longer than the domestic policy session, and you will see, you know, little one line mentions of different, you know, Turkey and Crete and Cyprus and, you know, all sorts of people wanting to send a message to a particular place or a particular grouping.
Well, it is interesting to note that both Russia and Georgia have sent representatives to the convention. They can't influence the platform. What would they hope to influence?
Oh, there's so much going on here. I was this morning, I had breakfast with the Norwegian ambassador to the UN. There are so many international people at this convention and so much international media coverage. Partially, there's two things going on here. One is they do want to be able to report back. What is the tenor of America? And one of the best ways to get it is when you bring 5,000 politically active people together as delegates and you have this process. It's not just a show. It really is a convening of some of the most active political elected and unelected officials in the country. So that's one thing they're interested in. The other thing they're interested in is communicating back about this phenomenon of this year's election campaign. And we have to be blunt. This is the most internationalized American election in history. Never has the rest of the world been so interested, watched so closely. I do a lot of international media, and they're literally wall-to-wall coverage of this convention, just as PBS in America is. So there's a great interest. And again, the platform becomes a vehicle by which the Russians and the Georgians and others really get something they can put their teeth into and go back home and say, well, here's what they say about NATO. Here's what they say about disarmament. Here's what they say about us. And so, yeah, it's a big part of why they're here.
Well, do you think that we'll get any sense of how the party will approach the South Ossetia question?
Very cautiously. Look,
John McCain is ready to pounce.
Well, John McCain, I think, is ready to talk about pouncing. The fact of the matter is that is a very complex situation, which has just taken a new turn today with Russia's recognition of the breakaway states. And you have a oil pipeline flowing through there that everybody is very, very conscious of. And so both parties, I think, are going to try and dial their rhetoric down on it. But let us be blunt about this. What happened in that region of the world defined the vice presidential process. When Vladimir Putin moved into South Ossetia, that was the end of Sebelius from Kansas or Tim Kaine from Virginia as a possible vice presidential candidate. You were not going to have Barack Obama get up at this convention and say, yeah, I just spent 3 years in the U.S. Senate. Here's my running mate, the governor of Kansas. We're ready to take on the world. Mm-hmm. That just doesn't sell. And so this is what's going on in the world is shaping this convention, and it also certainly shapes the platform. And as it gets more tense, the weird thing is, as it gets more tense, often the old hands of the party make the platform more vague because they want to give that new president as much flexibility as possible to deal with something.
So we get phrases like the Democratic Party, there was a section, I have lost it, but it was on health care, mm-hmm. which was so vague. It was, oh, yeah, it says I've lost it. It doesn't matter. But anyway, it was one of those things where everybody disagrees, but we're sure to do something on health care.
Yeah. And it's going to be really good.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I mean, look, that the bottom line is a platform in many ways today, unlike in the past when they were much more dynamic documents, but today a platform is much like the vice presidential pick, the first do no harm. And so they don't want to put things in there that they think could really anger anybody. But, of course, that's the point of politics, is to say things that are going to excite some people and you know, cause other people not to agree with you. And as you make a platform vague, I think you lose some of that energizing power for your base.
I have the exact quote now. While there are different approaches within the Democratic Party about how best to achieve the commitment of covering every American, we stand united to achieve this fundamental objective through the legislative process. It sounds like there's going to be a fight somewhere down the line. What does the platform mean for candidates in down-ticket races? Do the more liberal aspects of the platform create a problem for Democrats running in more conservative districts?
Absolutely. There's still a tradition in this country, not used as much as it was in the 70s and early 80s, of taking a Southern conservative candidate for Congress and saying, you know, here's the platform of his party, gay rights, abortion rights, you know, you run down the list. Mm-hmm. And I've actually seen ads placed in newspapers by Republican campaign committees that run down planks of the Democratic platform. And so, yeah, there's no question that a platform is a first-line tool that the Republican Party will use when it is useful. And the important thing to understand here is that's the way politics should be. Political parties should be identified as standing for something. Candidates should be identified as standing for something. We would have a healthier politics in this country if it was less about do I like the guy or do I like the woman and more about do I agree with what they say they'll do once they're in office. And it is the platform, much more than the acceptance speech, that tends to outline what they will do. And I will tell you the truth of the matter is nobody ever governs better than their platform.
John, I understand you have to run, but you'll be hosting conversations and forums throughout the week. With whom and about what? And could you do it in a half a minute?
Absolutely. We had a wonderful forum with Congressman John Conyers on the civil rights movement. We're going to be doing them with other members of Congress. I'm doing conversations about issues, about the platform, with all sorts of leading lights, and it's under the auspices of The Nation magazine and Progressive Democrats of America and some other good groups.
And John Nichols is the Washington, D.C. correspondent for The Nation. He's been talking to us from the DNC about the platform, the party's platform for 2008. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Leonard, it is a sheer delight at this crazy convention to talk to you.
For more on the Democratic Convention, stay with the WNYC News team live from Denver for insights and analysis. For a complete schedule of our convention coverage, visit the Vote 2008 page at WNYC.org.